supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Hello and welcome to the annual You Bet Your Garden Christmas Spectacular from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. In the studio with me is our traditional Christmas co-conspirator, Mr. Ken Queter, longtime You Bet Your Garden musical director and holder of the Guinness World Record for most coal in his stocking for 35 consecutive years.
I'm good to go. Where's our set list? What are we going to do first? Where's the band?
Nestled in their beds with visions of, probably something like sugar plums dancing in their heads.
So that's what's going on in my head.
All right. Anyway, this year we're going to give you a present and let you rest up your guitars. We present some of our favorite moments from the first 10 years of our annual Christmas spectaculars. We've assembled our best holiday plant interviews from over the years and lots of holiday tunes. You and the Reindeer Band have performed so many great numbers for us over the years that we'll barely be able to sample most of those tunes, much less include anything new. So no new music this time around.
No new music? But what about the big closing number I promised Peter that he could do? And he's even a real singer. No offense, Kenny.
None taken. With people who've actually heard me sing, I consider those kinds of statements to be more like informed opinions.
Why, it's Alexis Landis, who produces our show for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, and who has managed to slip new closing numbers into several previous so-called repeats. And the Peter she's referring to must be Peter Christian, our newest production assistant. Why, here he comes now.
Whoa, looks like they got you double-teamed, Mike. Be careful. I saw this in a wrestling match once. Don't let them get you into that corner.
Oh, Kenny, don't be ridiculous. I would never take Mike out with a flying dropkick or a submission hold like the Boston Crab. As long as he lets me sing, of course.
Petey, you sing in churches. I thought church singers were non-violent.
You've never seen us when the free buffet hits the table. You reach for the wrong guy's chicken leg after a long night of palestrina, and you can go from baritone to soprano real fast.
I think I'm supposed to throw a folding chair into the ring right about now.
Damn boy, damn boy. Okay, now just what song were you hoping to sing, Petey?
That would be, what song are we going to sing?
You and me? Gee, that's quite a compliment.
No, Kenny, I think he's hiding another singer in his pocket or someplace. Alexis, what's this about any new songs? Didn't you read my emails about this year's show being a straight-up greatest hits edition? No exceptions?
Read your emails. All of that endless blah-blah this and yada-yada that. Ha! I put you on my block sender list back in June. You wouldn't believe how much work I get done now. Anyway, I think it would be great to let Petey close the show.
I think this show closed about 5 minutes ago.
I'm getting a chair.
All right, everybody chill. It's time to start the show with a great interview we did back in 2002 with Jane Pepper, who for many years was the steady hand behind the scenes of the famed Philadelphia Flower Show, the 2015 edition of which will whisk us into the world of film the first week of March at the Pennsylvania Convention Center.
Well, it's an interesting story. The Philadelphia Flower Show started in 1829, and there was a gentleman down in Mexico, I believe he was the American ambassador there, called Mr. Poinsett, and he got absolutely enchanted by this enormous tropical plant with red bracts at Christmas time, which eventually he sent a piece of it up to Philadelphia to a nurseryman called Mr. Buist, B-U-I-S-T, and he loved to exhibit special things. And so at the first Philadelphia Flower Show in 1829, he shows up with this tropical plant, which now is the one that we have in so many variations in our homes for Christmas. So they eventually called it poinsettia.
And you say that the standard form or the grown-up, the adult-size thing, is very large?
It's huge. I don't know if you've been down to Mexico, but Actually, I saw them mostly in Kenya when I was there on a horticultural society trip. And they are about as tall as I am, about 5'5".
With presumably multiple bracts all over the plant?
Yes, and the reason they're so tall is because they're perennials there. They grow from year to year. So it just keeps on growing and growing, which is what would happen to your poinsettia if you just hung on to it for years and years and had a place where you could keep it.
Now, we should point out that I think many people still misunderstand the poinsettia because those we're calling them bracts, which is the correct term. But the red part is not the flower. Those are simply red leaves. The flowers themselves are in those little guys
those
in
little
the center,
sticky
right?
Sticky yellow things, which can be such a pain as they grow old and fall off and kind of make a mess all over your floor. But yes, you're absolutely right. That's what they are. And I think the other thing with the poinsettias that people really need to think about is keeping them out of drafts. Keep them in a place where they get a certain amount of sun, but not full sun, you know, just enough light, and keep them well watered.
All right, that was our good friend Jane Pepper from the Philadelphia Flower Show on the history of the poinsettia. Now we're going to go right to one of my favorite tunes that Kenny performed years and years ago. I believe it was back in 1999 because it was a favorite Christmas song of my wife. So here's Kenny and the band from way back when playing Blue Christmas.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree won't mean a thing if you're not here with me. And when those blue snowflakes start falling, that's when those blue memories start calling. You'll be doing all right on your Christmas away, but I'll have a blue, 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 blue Christmas. You'll be doing all right on your Christmas away, but I'll have a blue, 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 blue Christmas. You'll be doing all right on your Christmas away, but I'll have a blue, 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 blue Christmas.
All right, that was our musical director, Kenny Queter, in that year's edition of the Reindeer Band doing Blue Christmas. Now we're going to go straight to one of my favorite holiday plant interviews. People really misunderstand the various Christmas cactus and other holiday cacti out there. Well, here was Rosie Lerner from Purdue, an extension agent who came on the show to set us straight.
They're not as hard to take care of as some people might think. They are a little bit more persnickety than the other cacti because probably we're really interested in those flowers. They are actually true cacti, which is sometimes not clear to folks, but they are not native to the desert, as most of the other cactus are. They grow on other living things, not as parasites, but they just use them as friendly support. They normally, in their native habitat in the tropics of Brazil, they grow on tree bark.
Just like orchid.
Very similar to orchids.
Huh.
So even though botanically speaking they're related to the cacti, their habit is much more similar.
Now, when somebody buys a plant or gets one as a gift, is that something that's already been programmed to bloom at a specific holiday the first time?
Yes, in fact, the Christmas cacti or the holiday cacti tend to bloom at specific times, mostly related to the length of the dark period that they're going through at that particular time. So for roughly around 8 weeks prior to when they actually set bud, the length of the dark period is what is critical. Christmas cactus is one that does respond well if it's brought outdoors for the summer and then brought back in the fall. It seems to like that.
All right. Rosie Lerner, Extension Consumer Horticulture Specialist for the Purdue University Department of Horticulture and Landscape Architecture. Thanks very much for being on You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Boy, wasn't that a great interview on holiday cacti? And we've got lots more coming.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've been thinking about it, and we really should let Peter sing his song. He works really hard helping me with the show, and I think he deserves a little thank you.
Well, isn't that nice of you, Alexis? Petey, what do you think?
I think I work really hard on the show, and I think I should sing my song, too.
Well, there goes the old Christmas spirit sailing out the door. And speaking of the door, who's this who just walked in?
Oh, that's my partner, Jeannie Lyons. I thought she should join me.
Petey? Petey, what's that that just came out from behind your back?
Oh, and I thought I should bring my guitar along to provide some nice musical material as well.
All right, I guess we should toss out the lineup. Forget about all the great interviews and musical numbers we've spent hours picking out. And let you two clowns do a lounge act for the rest of the show.
Yes,
yeah, now
absolutely.
You're talking. Kenny, a little help here, please?
Hey, look, I got a harmonica.
Hey, let's take a short break. Coming up when we return, more great holiday tunes, amazing information about mistletoe, a great landscape plant called the Christmas fern, and how to actually use frankincense and myrrh.
Frankincense? Myrrh?
Yeah, what about the good stuff?
What about the gold?
I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to the You Bet Your Garden Christmas Spectacular from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Supporting WHYY and You Bet Your Garden is the Espoma Company, makers of Holly Tone brand organic plant food, developed for feeding hollies, azaleas, evergreens, and other acid-loving plants. The Espoma Company wishes all a happy holiday. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
Welcome back to the You Bet Your Garden Christmas Spectacular from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, here in the studio with our musical director, Ken Queter, bringing you the best musical numbers and holiday plant interviews from programs past. Right, Kenny? From programs past. I can't believe Alexis wants to try to slip a new musical number into this show.
You should let her do it, Mike. I talked to her during a break. Turns out that Peter and Jeannie have been rehearsing real hard, and after all, tis the season, Daddy-O. And you know, man, you haven't been very full of Christmas cheer.
Hey, Christmas cheer? How cheerful would you be stuck here working with Tiny Tim and 16 spirits of We Want to Be on the Christmas Show Future? Humbug. Humbug, I say. Are there no prisons, no workhouses for such as these? Anyway, speaking of wake, we better get back to it, or we'll be boiled in our own Christmas pudding. So let's listen to a great interview about frankincense and myrrh we did several years ago with our old friend and herbalist extraordinaire, Judith Ben Hurley. Do you think of frankincense and myrrh very differently or interchangeably?
Almost interchangeably. Frankincense is sort of spicy, woodsy, camphory, and it almost has a citrusy or a lemony top note. Myrrh is similar, but it's more earthy. Frankincense is calming. It's generally considered to be a calming herb when inhaled. And myrrh is more fortifying or rejuvenating, slightly lifting. So if you consider the two of them together, you can have a nice harmonious balance. I mean, if you can smell me, you can smell that I have frankincense and myrrh on together.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
You
came pre-scented.
I came pre-scented, and I came with goodies, too.
Oh, I see these wonderful things you have here.
I know. Check this out. That is a little...
Oh, I'm looking at... Judith has handed me a little blue bottle that says Ecodent Daily Care, and there's a little cartoon guy brushing his teeth.
Happily brushing his teeth.
Brushing his teeth. His eyes are dancing, and it says hardens teeth without fluoride. And so this has...
Has myrrh in it. It's other things and myrrh. Myrrh is an astringent for the gums for prevention and sometimes curing some forms of gingivitis, depending on how advanced they are.
You brought a ton of products with you.
Well, I have something that you can find in a natural food store or a supermarket, and it's a little massage oil with about 12 different herbs in them, including frankincense and myrrh. It's very, very relaxing. You can add some drops to the bath, and I added about 3 drops to a half a cup of Epsom salts. And you can get Epsom salts at a pharmacy, at a grocery store. They come with those milk carton things, and gardeners who have roses probably have them. And then put it in a little Ziploc, and you can rub your hands with it while they're wet to exfoliate after gardening, or you can put that in your bathtub and just soak in it. And it's got the same fragrance as the frankincense and myrrh oil.
You're the first person to say exfoliate on this show.
Really?
It's been 7 years, yes. You know.
Wow.
Another, I'm totally foliated.
Another, you know? First. This is an interesting thing, too. This is a
that
little...
That is so beautiful.
I know.
So this is called Zumbar, Z-U-M-B-A-R.
Right.
And it's a goat's milk soap.
That is goat's milk.
And unlike the other things you brought, this is just in terms of the, quote, active ingredient, this is just frankincense and myrrh.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Judith. It's always an absolute delight to have you on You Bet Your Garden. Judith is the author of many books. You can start with a good herb and move on from there. They are all a delight, as is she personally. Judith Ben Hurley, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and thanks for being on You Bet Your Garden.
Happy Holidays to you.
Right now, it's time for me to read my annual story.
I always like your stories, man. What's this one called?
The Wastrel and the Watermelon.
It's about me!
Now, a few years back, my summer garden, as usual, was dominated by tomatoes. The stars included the beautiful red and yellow blush Georgia Streak, Black Brandywine, a truly black, that is, dark purple shouldered version of the legendary Tasty Beefsteak, Super Marzano, presumably a mild-mannered San Marzano that was rocketed to my garden from the doomed planet Krypton. Honey, look, it's a tiny crashed spaceship. Yes, and there are tomato seeds wrapped in these red and blue blankets inside. Brandywine, which if it isn't the perfect tomato, you can see it from there. And Bellstar, a meaty paste tomato that's still germinating nicely, despite the 1988 printed on the faded envelope. The scarlet runner bean vines did achieve their full legendary size. I told my son to climb them and look for a harp and some shiny eggs up there. But they disliked the summer heat so much, they refused to produce a single scarlet blossom. Then boom, they burst into bloom on the first day of fall. And we had hummingbirds stacked up in the garden like airplanes at O'Hare the day before Thanksgiving. And the watermelon, of course, loved the heat. Yes, I grew watermelon. No, that is not the wisest choice in a sun and space-challenged garden. But gardening is not an educational experience. At least it isn't the way I do it. It's an artistic experience. And sometimes it's modern art, as in, is this thing right side up or what? And besides, my daughter had pulled out those big eyes, searched through her dresser drawers until she found a smile, which was easy to find as it was the only thing in those drawers. All her clothes have been on the floor since I bought those Bellstar seeds. And said, Daddy, could you please grow me some watermelon? I knew there was no way my little northeast garden could produce full-size melons before frost, but I might be able to pull off one of those smaller, round icebox types. So I got some garden baby seeds. To nobody's surprise, most of my starts look like the before pictures in a fertilizer ad. But one of them looked like it might survive planting, so when the weather warmed up enough, out it went. And it thrived! I planted the other starts too, but thrived is not the word that came to mind when you saw them. The good vine flowered and produced a fruit so perfect it could have been a catalog picture. The season progressed, the vine grew, and the baby got bigger, twice as big as the poor Tiny Tim ones in the other beds. And then it hit me. I was placing a lot of emotional investment in a watermelon in my tiny shade-plagued garden. What was I thinking? It was like a Highlights for Children project. How many scary thoughts can you find in there? Whenever I went out to the garden, I would try not to look at it right away, just nonchalantly catch a little glimpse to see if it was still there. Then I'd spend the rest of the day working up the nerve to check it for bullet holes. Finally, we had to go away on vacation. This is typically the part in the horror movie where you scream at the people not to go down and check those noises in the basement. But we returned to find the chosen fruit still there, and the tendril closest to that fruit brown and shriveled, the single best sign of watermelon ripeness. And a little yellow patch on the bottom of the fruit, the other single best sign of watermelon ripeness. I reached down and snapped it off the vine. Then I knew real fear. There's only one thing worse than spending an entire summer coddling a watermelon only to pick it a week too early. And that's spending the entire summer growing it for someone else to carve into the sea of green I now feared was inside. But the tendril was dead. The bottom was yellow. It had been on the vine a month longer than the seed packet said it needed to be. More importantly, it was no longer attached to that vine. It must be ripe, it must be ripe, I repeated over and over as I walked to the house with it cradled in my arms. I know it's ripe, I know it's ripe. I had become the little gardener who could. I took it into the house and got a knife out of the drawer. My daughter comes into the kitchen. Oh, it's so pretty, she says. Is it ripe? My body temperature drops to around 43 degrees. I can't speak. I shouldn't be holding a knife. Personally, I could lose an entire garden, and have, and not get upset. Well, not too upset. But this was for someone else. No, no, not was. Is for someone else. I held my breath, mumbled the promise to write a check to the Salvation Army, and sliced away. Hysterical blindness. I can't see anything. Then I see. Red. Lots of red running off the cutting board and onto the counter. Oh my God, I've cut off my thumb. No, no, wait, it's juice. Red juice, watermelon juice. Daddy, it's perfect, says my daughter, biting into a piece. My wife walks by and grabs a slice. Mmm, that's really good. Very sweet. Thanks, I say. There's a couple more outside that might be almost as good. Well, what a nice change of pace, says my wife. You normally don't grow watermelons. No! And I never will again! Special thanks to Monk Manley, Jeff Michael, and the great Jim Fogarty for providing that sweet, sweet background music behind my story.
Hey, man, I always dig your stories. It puts me right in a festive mood.
Okay, well, thank you, Ken. I appreciate that. I love reading those stories. And now we're going to do a tune of yours that's one of my favorites, Christmas on the Block by the late, great Alan Mann, the Philadelphia songwriter. He's not with us anymore.
Unfortunately, Alan passed away in the late 80s. He wrote a lot of great songs in his short career in Philadelphia, and this is one of the best ones.
And I think we've never told the people out there that this is a song about how a group of blind people reacted to Christmas lights and the Christmas season, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right. Let's hear Kenny performing the late, great Alan Mann's Christmas on the Block.
There's a street light that sits above the night, and it shines its gray light on the midnight air, and and the houses twinkle on the block. But there's one house that shines a special way out there, and it's Christmas in the city, and the trees are lighted pretty, but the prettiest Christmas tree of all. Oh, they see all the colors that we cannot, and there's a most beautiful Christmas on the block. They cannot see the light of day, when the night is forever, the fact remains, in this world of confusion there is peace, there is hope in despair, sometimes a beauty is a beast. And they cannot see the lightning, and they cannot hear the thunder, but they know what no one understands, that beauty is a blessing, love is all we've got, and there's a most beautiful Christmas on the block.
Right, that was a beautiful rendition of Alan Mann's Christmas on the Block by Kenny and that year's Reindeer Band. Now we're going to jump right to our interview about the Christmas fern with Dr. Gerald Klingemann, Professor Emeritus from the University of Arkansas. Dr. Klingemann, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Nice to be on your program today.
Is it true that this is what some of the first reefs were made of here?
My understanding is that it was one of the plants during the Victorian era. There was a real fern craze. It really started in England in the 1840s and 50s, and then eventually made it to the United States sort of in the 1870s and 80s, I assume. In that period, they were making Christmas wreaths, and you go out in the woods in the middle of winter, one of the few evergreen things you would find throughout most of the eastern states will be the Christmas fern.
That's a little unusual for a fern, isn't
right.
it?
Right. We don't have many evergreen ferns that you find in the temperate woodlands. This species actually ranges from sort of southern Nova Scotia to Wisconsin and then basically all of the eastern woodlands down to central Texas and down to Florida. So it covers that whole eastern half of the United States. But Christmas fern is actually, of the native ferns, probably one of the best to grow in the garden. It's quite adaptable, and it responds well to cultivation. And the foliage is completely evergreen up until the time new fronds form in the spring. And just as the new fronds are beginning to unfurl, the old frond will die away. They essentially last for 12 months. And the plants will get to be 16 or so inches tall and about that broad out in the wild. You put them in cultivation, and what typically will happen then is the plant will become just much more luxuriant, maybe get a little bit bigger.
So this is an underutilized evergreen in the landscape.
It certainly could be used more than it is, and it's perfectly hardy up through zone 3 at least, and so be easy to find a place where it would grow. It won't do well in afternoon light or areas where you get full sun. At least it won't in the south, and in a more northern climate you might be able to get away with more sunlight than you could down here.
And there are different shapes that people see in this plant. One of the ones you like to talk about is a kind of a Christmas stocking shape or a winter mitten kind of a thing?
Right. Well, the individual pinna on the frond, the little leaflet on the frond, if you will, is mitten shape. That's probably the easiest way to identify it.
All right. Very good. That's Dr. Gerald Klingemann, a professor emeritus of the University of Arkansas, telling us some of the wonders of the Christmas fern, which sounds like a great new evergreen I may be checking out. Dr. Klingemann, thank you for taking the time to speak with us, and okay. You have a Merry Christmas.
Well, you too, Mike.
All right. What a great interview that was about a fascinating Christmas plant that so many of us could grow in our own gardens. And there's lots more coming up. We'll have a sampling of our big production numbers from the past, a fascinating mistletoe interview.
And me.
And me.
Oh, yeah? Singing.
Let It Snow.
Jingle Bell Rock.
Wooly Bully.
How about you all sing Far, Far Away? Anyway, I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to what used to be the greatest hits edition of the You Bet Your Garden Christmas Spectacular from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Supporting WHYY and You Bet Your Garden is the Espoma Company, makers of Holly Tone brand organic plant food, developed for feeding hollies, azaleas, evergreens, and other acid-loving plants. The Espoma Company wishes all a happy holiday. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a Viking river cruise through the gardens of Provence. More at 800-423-0247 or grandamericantours.com.
Without any fear. can't stop all the fight. Very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one without any.
All right, well, welcome back to the You Bet Your Garden Christmas Spectacular. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and of course, that was the great, great John Lennon song, Happy Christmas, War is Over, by our own Kenny Queter and the Reindeer Band from several years ago, one of many big production numbers we did over the year.
Please let the kids do a song. It's all Peter wants for Christmas.
Really? So that means I could return his present for cash? I'll have to think about this. Yeah, but I wonder if the dollar store even takes returns. Anyway, it's time to get back on track with a really unusual Christmas song Kenny performed on a holiday show we did a few years ago. Remember, Kenny, we sent it out to all the truckers who started calling in after our show went up on the NPR Talk Channel on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Yeah, seriously. Get it, man? Seriously?
Don't quit your day job, Kenny.
I don't have a day job. This is it, dude.
Well, then God bless you.
Well, I'm chucking trees for Christmas on this old mountaintop. I'm chucking them down to the middle of town for that big Christmas lot. Yeah, I'm chucking trees for Christmas, singing jingle bells on my way. Chucking trees for Christmas, for Christmas Day. Yeah, you'll find me chucking Christmas trees to town every year. And I feel like Santa's helper, spreading a bit of the cheer. Cause the kiddies have been waiting for this season all year long. For Christmas trees and old Saint Nick, brighten up their home. As I'm chucking trees for Christmas on this old mountaintop, I'm chucking them down to the middle of town for that big Christmas light. Yeah, I'm chucking trees for Christmas, singing jingle bells on my way. I'm chucking trees for Christmas, for Christmas Day. I got a string of pretty Christmas lights that hang from the cab of my truck, and a little tree on my dashboard that I decorated up. Well, people might think I'm crazy by the silly things I do, but I don't care, cause I think the truck's like Christmas too. Cause I'm chucking trees for Christmas on this old mountaintop. I'm chucking them down to the middle of town for that big Christmas light. I'm chucking trees for Christmas, singing jingle bells on my way. I'm chucking trees for Christmas, for Christmas Day. Yeah, I'm chucking trees for Christmas on this old mountaintop. I'm chucking them down to the middle of town for that big Christmas light. Yes, I'm chucking trees for Christmas, singing jingle bells on my way. I'm chucking trees for Christmas, for Christmas Day. Yeah, I'm chucking trees for Christmas, for Christmas Day.
That was Ken Queter and that year's Reindeer Band with Truckin' Trees for Christmas. All right, it's time to talk mistletoe. And we're going to talk mistletoe with Ray Ridlin, an extension educator in the Oklahoma County, Oklahoma State University Extension Service for Agriculture and Horticulture. And one of the reasons that we're talking to an extension agent in Oklahoma about mistletoe is that mistletoe is your state flower?
Well, not necessarily our state flower. It is actually our state floral emblem. And the way the state floral emblem came about is the Women's Congress for the 1893 Chicago's World Fair wanted to have each state should select a unique floral emblem to represent their state at the exposition. And originally, Oklahoma wanted the passion flower, but they mistakenly, in error, thought that Arkansas had selected it, which in fact they haven't. So their second choice was the mistletoe.
So that's very unusual to pick as your, like, target flower, a parasitic plant.
A parasitic plant. Well, the one thing about mistletoe, you know, the winter times here, most of our trees are deciduous, and, you know, it's one of the few green things. It's evergreen year-round, and one of the few things that you could decorate a grave with in the wintertime.
And that is one of the big reasons it became known as a holiday plant back in Europe.
Yes. And there's a lot of, you know, Norse mythology behind mistletoe also, about this god of summer, Baldur, was killed by an arrow tipped by mistletoe, and his mother brought him back to life and shed tears for several days, you know, before she brought him back to life. And that's what they say little white berries on the mistletoe are, represent the tears of his mother, Frigga, the goddess of love. Because if he died, we would never have summer again. It would all be winter, and everything would perish. And when she brought him back to life, she had a tree with mistletoe and kissed everybody that passed underneath it. And that's how he came to the kissing under the mistletoe from the Norse mythology.
Oh, and she was kissing everybody because she was so happy her son was back.
Yes.
That's amazing. Now, mistletoe is a really weird plant, Ray. Let's be honest about this.
Yes.
There are not a lot of true parasitic plants in the plant world, are there?
No, very few.
And this is, I guess, one of the reasons it has berries, like holly, is birds are attracted by the berries. They're certainly not poisoned by them.
Right.
And then they'll fly, and the next time they take a rest stop, can we say delicately? Would that be a nice way of putting it?
A pit stop.
Yes.
Layover.
If it's over a pit, yeah. And they'll drop that berry right back into the ground with a little bit of fertilizer. And then what happens, right?
Well, actually, they deposit it on a tree.
That's how
it spread from tree to tree.
So it does not come up out of the ground and attack a tree.
No, it grows strictly, strictly an aerial plant growing on limbs of trees.
Is there a lot of mistletoe in Oklahoma?
Yeah, normally we'll see it mainly in elm trees in Oklahoma. Any tree that's under stress, and a lot of our, you know, a lot of parts of the country are familiar with the American elms and the Dutch elm disease and the decline of those. So normally we see it in trees that are in decline, and it's always one of those chickens or the egg. Is the mistletoe there causing the decline of the tree, or is the tree in decline making it more susceptible to have mistletoe grow in it?
Well, you know, I was doing some reading around to prepare for our talk today, and there's a lot of information, as you know, about the American form of mistletoe and the European form of mistletoe. But I ran into this great Australian website that said if you want a mistletoe that you can use as a holiday decoration, you need to go to southwestern Australia. And so when I said that mistletoe grows on just about every continent, I wasn't kidding.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a native, are you familiar with the Christmas bush?
No, I'm not.
A mistletoe there grows into a tree shape that's 30 feet high with bright orange-yellow blooms that flower in December. And it is a tree, but it's a parasitic tree. Its roots turn into an underground network that parasitize smaller plants around, even lawn grasses. It'll parasitize grass with the roots of this tree.
I'm going to have to investigate that. You've got my curiosity yet.
There is something about these parasitic plants and their berries that have fascinated people for millennia.
And the term mistletoe, the Celtic language, it means, you know, all heal. So maybe any plant that has some healing type, you know, attributes, you know, they're calling mistletoe.
All right. Ray Ridlin is an extension agent from Oklahoma County in the Oklahoma State University Extension Service. Ray, thanks very much for being on our Christmas show this year.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, Mike, and have a great holiday season.
You too.
The music came out in the First World War. The bloody Red Baron.
like a man, ignore all of its men, and call on stupid to do it again. 'Twas the night before Christmas in 40 below, when Snoopy went up in search of his foe. He spied the Red Baron and fiercely they fought. With lice on his wings, Snoopy knew he was caught. Christmas bells, those Christmas bells ring out from the land, asking peace of all the world and goodwill to man. The Baron had Snoopy dead in his sights and reached for the trigger to pull it up tight. Why he didn't shoot, well, we'll never know. Or was it the bells from the village below? Christmas bells, those Christmas bells, ringing through the land, bringing peace to all the world and goodwill to man. The Baron made Snoopy fly to the Rhine and forced him to land behind the enemy lines. Snoopy was certain that this was the end when the Baron cried out,
Merry Christmas, my friend!
The Baron then offered a holiday toast, and Snoopy, our hero, saluted his host. And then with the roar, they were both on the way, each knowing they...
Thanks to all of our great listeners for indulging this annual exercise in holiday cheer. We hope you enjoyed it, as we always do. If you had a gardening question, don't despair. Like we always say, you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or email us at garden@whyy.org. No time for me to read the Gardens Alive question of the week, but we have a great one all about holiday plant care. How to keep your paper whites tidy and get your amaryllis to rebloom. It's all waiting for you at the You Bet Your Garden section of GardensAlive.com. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to that question of the week, find answers to all your garden questions, listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Special thanks to Julian Hertzfeld and all of the many talented musicians and singers who performed on our holiday specials over the years. And, of course, holiday greetings to Santa's weekly helpers, Rich Banowitz and Sarah the Festive She-Devil Kazar, our producer, Alexis Landis, our esteemed editor, Al Banks, and, hey, wait a minute. Cut the music. Kenny, I don't believe this. It happened again. How could I misread the clock? But it looks like we still got a couple minutes to go.
You didn't misread nothing. Remember that chair I kept talking about? Well, I actually went out and found one during the break.
Yeah, and?
And I stood on it and turned the clock back. Now, luckily...
Let me guess. Peter and Jeannie just happen to have a musical number that'll fill the time we have left. But those two can't decide what to sing.
I can.
Mom!
Mom? I am seriously outnumbered here.
Oh, come on, Scrooge. Mike, give us a chance. Come on, what do you have to lose?
What do I got to lose? Let me see. My pension, my 401k. If Kenny gets involved in the song, maybe my Social Security.
I think the song that Jeannie's mom's going to pick is the real Social Security, man. Everything we need.
Merry Christmas, Mike. Merry Christmas, Alexis. And Merry Christmas to everyone out there in Radioland.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin mother. Father and Child, Holy Infant, so tender and mild, sleep in heavenly peace, sleep in heavenly peace.
Silent night, holy night, shepherds quake at the sight, glory stream from heaven afar, heavenly hosts sing alleluia, Christ the Savior is born, Christ the Savior is born.
Silent night, holy night, Son of God, from thy holy face, with the dawn of redeeming grace, Jesus, Lord, at thy birth, Jesus, Lord, at thy birth.
When growing time arrives, which fruit will be the first to appear? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll name three sweet treats that produce their produce in the merry month of, well, June. Plus your fabulous phone calls.